Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I gotta stop aspirating like that. Anyway, hi guys. I'm Matt. I'm the host. With me this week is Joe, the fantastic co-host. He's currently not wearing a luchador outfit, I don't think.
No, the mask is at the cleaners. I have one.
I know. I've seen pictures of it. Didn't you make a Miles Morales one?
I have my own spider persona. I'm not even joking. Like, you know how people have like their own OCs and stuff like that?
Yeah, I know. I know what it is.
I have a Spider-sona. I legitimately have made my own outfit for Spider-Man from scratch, actually. So yes, I have a Boricua Spider-Man outfit.
I don't know why people would find that unusual. just to make sure, just in case people are going to give Joe crap, I'll throw something in there. I have been spending this past week watching dance covers of K-pop songs, not K-pop songs themselves, but groups of dancers who just dance to them. So there you go. That's my thing. Go ahead and make fun of us both. Anyway, we got some top stories to talk about before we get on to the emails and questions and so forth. The first one I want to talk about really fast because there's not a ton to talk about. It's just interesting. Diablo 3 Seasons 22 is coming out this month. Specifically, it's coming out on November 20th, which is 3 days before Shadowlands. I like to call this, you can do this for 3 days and then you can stop, because let's be honest, Shadowlands is probably the most anticipated expansion since Legion, and possibly more anticipated than Legion in a lot of ways. I've seen a lot of interest. Oh my God. I've seen a lot of interest in the game and in the expansion in particular. So there's some stuff that I'm not particularly jazzed about, but at any rate, if you had to pick between the two, I'm pretty sure I know what you'd pick, but let's throw that out there to you anyway, Joe.
What do you think I would pick?
I would think you'd pick Diablo 3. I mean, come on.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Honestly, I've been pretty excited about the new season. In case you don't know and you want to know, Season 22's got the Shades of the Nephilim theme, which basically whenever you click on a pylon or shrine, thank you, Brain, for eventually coming up with the word, you spawn a shadow clone of your character. The shadow clone has one of three basic random specs for your class, and they follow you around for a minute or until you die, and they just chain attack everything around you. So I've actually always wanted them to do a season theme that had a pylon or shrine effect, so I'm pretty happy about that. And yeah, it's an exciting power. It's pretty neat. The other thing that it has also, though, built into this season is an extra Kanai's Cube slot. Normally you only get three, one weapon, one armor, one jewelry. This time you'll get a fourth one that can be any of them. It can be a weapon, it can be a jewelry, or it can be an armor. So you can have two weapons, two weapon powers for your Kanai's Cube, or you can have two jewelry powers or two armor powers. You can double up on one category, which I think is pretty cool. I'm actually looking forward to playing around with it and seeing if I can come up with anything interesting to do with it. But yeah, that I know that this is because of things that have happened, the global pandemic, mm-hmm. having to push back Shadowlands release date. It's just there's after a while you just have to take it. You just have to say, look, it's just going to happen that way. Both season 22 of Diablo 3 and Shadowlands were pushed back due to testing and other issues.
Yeah.
And that's just what happens. But having said that, I feel really bad for Diablo 3 because no one's going to play that season. Once Shadowlands comes out, everyone's going to forget that Diablo 3 exists for a month, except for a few diehard Diablo-ers. So I feel bad about that. But also, the WoW anniversary event, which started last week, I believe.
Yep.
It's been from the 1st of November, I think, till the 15th.
I want to say that's correct.
Yeah, I don't remember the end date of it, but it's still going right now. So if you've that's pretty ironic for another reason, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, if you've missed it up to this point, if you haven't gotten any of the world bosses, you can still do it. They're all up. Kazak, the Dragons of Nightmare, and Azurgos. I finally got the two-hand sword off of Azurgos, Typhoon. And I used it as my main weapon for about a week on that paladin before today. And I said before today because today they released the pre-expansion event.
Yes.
So if you've been waiting for the pre-expansion event, they have released it. Let's just talk about it up front. There's this one. I don't think this is a spoiler because as soon as you log in, it's a quest that's right on the map and you get a quest to go do it really relatively quickly. So, but in just in case, if you want to know nothing about this for whatever reason, skip 5 minutes ahead or so. When you get into the world, one of the things you do is you go to Stormwind or Orgrimmar and you find out what's been going on. You get to see a neat little cinematic that shows all this stuff happening. You're sent around to go figure out what's going on with the Scourge. Why are they there? Why are they attacking? And you're given a quest. When you finish all that, you're given two quests. One is to go up to Northrend. The other is to go to the Marist Stead.
Yep.
Because Nathanos Blightcaller needs to get his face kicked in. And you get this both of your Horde or Alliance. And do you want to talk about it? Like, I know we're going to talk about it on the show. Do you want to talk about how it ends, the ending cinematic?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely can. And again, sorry, spoilers entail. It's this wonderful moment, and I must have watched this cinematic 5 times since I got home from work. It's this wonderful thing where Nathanos is being Nathanos, and he's, you know, being all smug and smarmy and, you know, is that the best you got? And then he gets shot so hard and yeeted through this wonderful mist of the Plague Lands and pinned to the wall of the Stead. And he gets this wonderful smug, and he's like, now it's getting interesting. And then gets absolutely housed by Tyrande without her even breaking a sweat. Like, and that was one of the most beautiful things about it. Like, he's trying to be cocky. He's trying to be, you know, this consummate in control, trying to make the jibes to throw her off. And nothing. She's so calm. She's so cool. And she just absolutely destroys him. And then she does this wonderful scene where, hey, where is she? And we all know who she is. And Nathanos starts on his thing. She's with him in the dark place. And you'll never find her. And he just keeps going on and on. And she says, where is she? And, you know, he's going on and on. And she just kills him. There's no playful banter. There's no mercy. It's him on his knees dying to her blade. And then she just turns around and walks away. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. So I love it. And somebody in chat saying that he got what he wanted. We don't know. We don't know yet.
I tend to agree with the person in chat who said that he got what he wanted. I didn't like that. My dream for what would have happened would be that she would have kept him alive, just ripped his tongue out, ripped his arms and legs off, and then like chained him to Tel Drassel so he could hang there unable to talk. Because that's the thing that's really going to bug Nathanos. Being unable to serve Sylvanas and being unable to talk. Because killing him, I do think he's going to pop back up in the Shadowlands. But I will say that I did like that she all completely no-sold him.
Yeah.
Like, finally, somebody just reminds you that he was a minor quest giver in Classic. He's not. Like, he's been elevated to a pretty high level, but this is not a guy who was originally taking on gods. And I like that we finally get a sense that, you know, he's been trying to toy with her for, like, a while now, and she just was like, no, you are out of your league. You have always been out of your league. You are somebody else's apron, you know, apron string. You are not important. And I like that. I did like that. I just feel like I do agree with you. who said it? Do you remember?
This is from Azure Hacks.
Azure Hacks, I agree with you that that was what he wanted, and he will come back. But I feel like she at this point doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, it's not important to her. The only thing she wanted from him was the information as to where Sylvanas was. When he was not forthcoming enough, she just said, okay, and moved on. You'll note that when you do this whole thing, when you start the pre-expansion event, you see various people being face down by Sylvanas' agents. You see Anduin get grabbed by chains and dragged off into the sky. You know that you find out very quickly that Thrall, Bane, Jaina, and Anduin all get kidnapped. When they come for Tyrande, she takes them out.
Yeah, and it's even the Horde comments on it. Like, it's, yeah, you know, her agents, you know, came for everybody. Oh, you know, and then, why can I not remember her name now? The rogue.
Valyria Sanguinar?
Yeah, thank you. Valyria Sanguinar. Yeah, she basically says, no, you don't understand. She took them all out. Like, she destroyed them. They couldn't touch her. And it's like, ooh. Yeah, it's nice to see Taran getting some time to be that bad, you know, like to be that powerful, to be that in control. It was nice to see. And yeah. whether or not Nathanos got what he wanted, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe Sylvanas lied to him because, I
think he got what he wanted, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work out in his favor.
Yeah.
And he shows up in the mall and she's like, yeah, whatever. I don't need you anymore. That could be a problem for him.
Yep. And I think that might be a thing that happens as well. And so who knows? But yeah, no, it's a fun time. It's a fun time for pre-expansion event stuff. I haven't seen any griefing yet, which I'm surprised about.
It's still early days, but I've done Nathanos 7 times today, because I had a bunch of vaults I wanted to get weapons for. He drops, when you do there's a world quest, when you do it, you get a level, item level 115 weapon. So if you don't have one of those, not bad. And I did it, like, two of the times I did it, there were both Horde and Alliance there.
Yeah, and when I mean griefing, though, I mean, like, what we were expecting, or at least what I was expecting, was the whole undead infection thing from the very, very first time. And as chat is saying, they nerfed zombies a lot from PTR, and it's possible that they do ramp up, who knows. But I remember way back during the original Scourge invasion, you could not be in a city. You could not be there was no safe place.
As of today, it wasn't barely even noticeable. Like, I think I saw one at one point.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think you're right in that they have reduced it from the PTR, which the PTR, from what I understand, was actually really bad. It was very hard to get anything done.
Yeah, and I think they have to balance that. Like, I understand that some people may find that fun, but some of us don't. I don't have time for that type of shenanigans. If I'm going to get in and do my stuff, I want to get in and do my stuff. But yeah, who knows? We'll see. We'll see if it ramps up. It's entirely possible that it'll ramp up to the last day, and the last day will just be an absolute cluster of just undead going everywhere. Who knows?
I've seen people saying, you know, I remembered this being really fun, but it's not actually all that much fun when I'm experiencing it. I feel like saying, you know, you were a lot younger when you did this the first time, guys.
Yeah, when we were all, like, you know, late teens, early 20s.
Not all of this, but yeah.
So, but yeah, who knows?
But anyway, yeah, so that's going on right now. It's still in its first week, so there's more to come next week. And then after that, of course, on the 23rd, we will be having the Shadowlands launch, and we'll all get to see the new content for the first time, which I'm going to say it's interesting what they've done here. I like some of the stuff they've done a lot, and I'm not going to go too much into this, but one of the things they've done that I really think is a good move is they've gone back to a slightly more linear style of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of you get to a certain point and then you can pick anywhere you want to go. I understand why they did that, and I thought it worked really well for Legion. I didn't feel like it worked as well for Battle for Azeroth, especially Alliance side, because I felt like the Alliance zones didn't feel cohesive because they were so big. They actually ended up feeling more like zones within zones. Stormsong Valley in particular had like these two completely unrelated storylines. One is the big Horde invasion, and the other is, like, you know, what's really going on with the fleet. And they're not connected by much of anything other than they just both happen. Dresvar are a little bit more connected. Tirisgard, I want to say Tirisgard, it's not Tirisgard, but I can't remember the whatever it is, Tiri something. That area didn't feel like even remotely cohesive. Like there's the bit where you're trying to figure out what Ashvain's up to. And then there's like all the random stuff that happens on your way through it. And I felt like the horde zones were a little bit better in that regard. Especially Nazmir. I felt like Nazmir horde side. I felt like Nazmir was a lot more unified than the Alliance zones were. Not that they were bad. I'm not saying they were bad zones. I just feel like the horde experience to me felt more cohesive, especially Nazmir and Voldoon. Not so much for Zandalar, but I didn't get very far, so I could be.
I mean, I think the horde story was it was at least consistent because everything terminated by coming back to a central point, right? Like everything had like that touch point. It was always about the Zandalar. It was always about the insurgents. It was always about, you know, it didn't matter where you went. It was always trying to keep the Zandalari together and whatever. And they did a really good job of that. And I think that the choose your own adventure stuff works to a certain extent. I like the idea of choosing where you go, but I actually think Shadowlands is doing it probably the best option I think they can, which is you are ostensibly given a guided tour through all the zones to get to max level. You get to experience a bit of the story from all the zones, and then you get to choose which story you want to continue exploring. And it gives you a little sample of everything, so then you can make an educated choice. And I like that. I think that's a good idea.
And also, once you've gotten your first character through, if you start your next character and you get to a certain point in the story, you can pick, okay, just give me a covenant now. And instead of going through and doing all that stuff you did before again, you start doing world quests to level immediately. And it's much more like adventure mode from Diablo 3. And I think that's a good choice because it lets people decide, do I want to see it all again? Do I want to get a sense of how this works? Or do I just want to pick a covenant and go? And both options work once you've done the original go through. So I think that's a good choice. I think in general, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. I don't know how I feel about Soulbinds. I'll be upfront. But in general, I'm starting to get pretty excited. I think that's the general air of the game seems to be that people feel excited for this expansion.
I would agree. And I think it's a really good time. I've seen a lot of players start coming back to the game that completely glossed over Battle for Azeroth. I think that this is, I don't want to say one of the most anticipated, but I think it's going to be as anticipated as Legion was at the very least.
Yeah, I'd be willing to agree with that. I think to a certain degree, and I don't, we've talked about it before, so I don't feel the need to blur it, but I think part of the problem was always going to be that if people knew going into Battle for Azeroth that it was going to be about the old gods more than it was going to be about anything else, like the end enemy was the old gods, and that was the thread that was like in the background through a lot of it, I think people would have been more patient with it. But they felt like, well, it's obviously this faction war, and I don't want to do the faction war, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of players, that was some players loved it and love faction war, and some players don't. So that's pretty much all we had for this week to talk about. So I guess at this point, we'll move on to doing them questions and emails that we do. If you have a question for the show, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. Or you can do that thing where you say, oh, either show, and then, you know, the music from that Star Trek episode where Kirk and Spock fought over Spock's wife starts playing. And
I was thinking of the battle music from The Lizard.
No, it's the dun 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 dun. Because let's face it, I mean, you're gonna pick the Anwun. Yeah, I'm gonna pick the swoopy thing. It's you know,
it's fair. It's totally fair.
But you know, if you don't want to do that, if you want to hit up our Discord, we've got the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel for people who are our patrons. And I do recommend being a patron of the show because A, it pays my salary, and also B, it means we can do more cool stuff like podcasts. If you've ever wondered, like, you know, what would it be like if Joe and Matt did more podcasts? Well, you can make that happen. Or you can also ask a question if you can't be a patron for whatever reason, because we still appreciate you. There's the Q Questions channel on our Discord server, and you can still ask questions for this show or for the Q or for the other show, Lore Watch, that Joe and I do. And yeah, we'll take them from any source. But we like to look in the Q and the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel first because we said we would. We like to give people things for supporting us. It's just
incentive.
But yeah, Joe's going to read the questions for us now. So if you don't mind, Joe.
Absolutely. And of course, right now, because Bellick decided to give us that cue, cue Star Trek fight music, as Joe and Matt decide which podcast this question belongs in. As a matter of fact, I will actually splice in a couple seconds of the Star Trek battle music here.
Greetings, Joe. I'm a doctor and a podcast.
Greetings, watchers. About a year ago, I asked you this question. With Shadowlands coming, I was hoping for an update. I'm an Alliance player. For those of us who don't play Horde, how can we learn more about Muam Samdi and the other Loa? It seems like they're going to play a major role in Shadowlands, but outside of your podcast, I don't have much context, especially in game. Your thoughts would be appreciated. For the Alliance! Bellick of Dragonblight.
I mean, the easiest way is to play Horde. I mean, that is the easiest way to do it. There's a site called Blizzard Watch that occasionally writes lore articles. You could read those. I don't know if you've actually done anything about Muam Samdi. That might be a good idea to do something.
Yeah, that's a...
But we have generally talked about Loa and trolls and all that stuff before. There's also other sources. Like, for instance, they just put out Shadows Rising, a really good novel by Madeline Rue,
I want to say. Madeline Rue.
I always forget. Here's the thing. I'm bad with names, guys. That's all I have. But Madeline Rue, we did an interview with her a few months back, and she was really great. Just really nice to talk to. And she did a good job on that book, quite frankly. If you want to learn a little bit more about Muam Samdi, there you go. You read the book. That'll help. I know some people don't like to read books or other outside media, but if you're not going to play Horde, that's where almost all of Muam Samdi's story is. It's not really, he's a Zandalari Loa. There's not a ton of story for him in the Alliance. We don't have any trolls, unfortunately. I think we should, quite frankly. There can be like six different kinds of elves, and I think we could have like trolls that were like, not.
We can have a loner program. We'll take some dwarves on the Horde side. You can take some trolls on the Alliance side. It'll be fine. It'll be a cultural exchange. We're good.
You guys hate dwarves more than anything.
I love dwarves.
The Horde doesn't. Tauren hate them. Orcs hate them.
Yeah, it just makes Dwargar. It's fine.
We did that, and they still stay in the Alliance.
I know! Grumble.
It's weird that you guys keep saying Horde players love dwarves, but the Horde itself hates them. Yeah. I mean, Tauren really hate them because they keep digging up their stuff. But anyway, those are my recommendations. You got anything, Joe?
I'm going to flout our stuff. We between the Lore Watch podcast, the site itself, those are great resources. Several of the Blizzard Watch staff actually do stream, and occasionally we will do leveling streams. You can check our various Twitters for when that is. The other thing that you can do if you don't want to read the books, which I highly recommend reading, anything to do with Muam Samdi, so in this case, Shadows Rising is a great option. There are other lore-focused folks out there that do breakdowns in video format of specifically... topics like what's Muam Samdi's story, and then they do an entire hour-long episode on stuff like that. So that content is out there. You can find it if you want to catch up on it. But I do think that the best way, even if you don't want to stick with Horde, the best way to experience it really would be roll a Horde tune, go through Battle for Azeroth, at least just through the main stories of the zones. In particular, you can just do Nazmir and get the bulk of that stuff. And then I think you'll be okay, at least to understand more about Muam Samdi. So that's my two cents. All right. Anything else?
No, I mean, that's pretty much all we really need. I will say this, that Muam Samdi is a fascinating character, and it is definitely worth your time to get to learn more about him. I really feel like the by itself, the Vol'jin quest, where you get to see him interacting with various figures, does a good job of revealing more. I'm really going to say, I get not wanting to play Horde. I kind of didn't want to play Horde this past expansion. It was very hard for me. And if that's just the choice you've made, that's fine. But you can do like Joe said, you can look online pretty easily and you can find other people have played them and you can just watch the video. You don't even necessarily need to play it.
And I mean, and I'll give a shout out. We've done a show with him in the past. It was one of the weeks that Matt was out when Anne was still doing Lore Watch. I think we had Jesse from Lost Codex on, and he does great content as well. So like, I know I'm almost 1,000% certain that he did an episode on Bomb Zombie. So like there's stuff out there. All right. Our next question. Good morning to the two sexiest men in WoW podcasting. Well, okay then.
When are they getting here?
So I swam around Exile's Reach. I found nothing. Lots of beautifully created environment features and lots of missed opportunity. No wildlife. No Tortolan under sea bars. No chests. No NPCs. Imagine if they introduced new players to basic lore, faction tensions, races, etc. through exploring the island. Don't get me wrong, the questing is very cool, but wouldn't it be cool if there was more? Thank you for all the work you do. Finally, isn't it about time that you had Anne on as a special guest? This is from Chris. Chris, I actually don't know if we're allowed to do that because now she actually has to have that verified and checked off by people that are pretty, you know, important as far as deciding who goes on what shows. So
It's not that we don't like to want to have her around. It's that she is busy and like something really cool with her life.
Yeah. The reason we can have her on the D&D podcast is because it has nothing to do with WoW whatsoever.
Yep. But to answer your question, I mean, on the one hand, yes, that stuff would be cool. But on the other hand, sometimes you need to know what you're trying to do and you need to focus on what you're trying to do. The Exile's Reach is an introductory experience. It is basically a tutorial mode for playing World of Warcraft, not for the lore of World of Warcraft. Although the lore of World of Warcraft is part of it, the story does reveal things. But the main purpose of Exile's Reach is to teach you, the new player, how to play this.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're not a new player, you might be on a new character class you've never played before. And again, they're still trying to teach you how to play it. And that's their primary focus. It's not really designed, like, if you think about it, you're starting off at level one. If you try and populate the area around the island with stuff that's not related to what you're doing, it'll either be wiping people out as they attempt to explore it, or it'll be so underpowered that they're just going to waltz through it.
Yeah.
Stuff doesn't really scale exactly on Exile's Reach. I mean, there's stuff you go as you go up in level, stuff you encounter goes up in level, but it's not like just everything is always the same level as you. So I don't think it would be bad to have really neat stuff on the island to like to find and so forth. But I remember when I did Exile's Reach, there's one particular thing that's the mob in question is a rare spawn that you need to get a group to kill. Especially since even if you're wearing heirlooms, it's just too hard for like a level 5 character to solo this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it's a really hard bear to fight and you need a group. And if you're unlucky enough that you just can't get a group for whatever reason, you're not going to kill it. And I feel like having an entire island full of like random cool moments could actually end up with that kind of thing. But I get why you like it. I did the Timeless Isle and I did Hellfire, not Hellfire, Tanan Jungle. I did Tanan Jungle and Argus. Mm-hmm. I get what you're talking about. I think Exile's Reach was trying to be simpler. And it was trying to basically be, here is a step-by-step thing. As you play through this, it will show you how to play this game. I feel like that was their focus.
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem that I'm always going to try to argue for more lore or to get people started with little nuggets of lore. But the way they have it designed right now fixes a problem that the game has had for a very long time. We have to bear in mind that this game is 16 years old. It's been around for a while. There's a lot of story in this game. We've gone through how many expansions at this point, how many story arcs, how many NPCs have been introduced, how many important events have happened just in the span of that 16 years of this game. Like when Vanilla WoW first released, we're like, oh, we have three massive wars and those were like our touch points. And now how much has happened since then that it sort of dwarfs almost those three wars. The problem with you get into is when you start introducing lore is, what lore? What do you introduce players to? What tidbits do you try to put in there to entice them that doesn't leave something else out because everything is so interwoven at this point? I talk about why Shadowlands is really exciting to me because the story of Shadowlands is new, right? It's, yes, there's some things that they're keying off of that have been around for a little while, i.e. the Shadowlands, but it was never really well defined, so everything that we're learning is new. It's not tethered. It's being interwoven as we experience it. And it's been very rare that we've had an expansion that's done that. So what do you show those players? And then you run the risk of showing them the wrong thing, or too much, or too little. Like Matt said, they could gloss right past it. It could be too much of a diversion. Exile's Reach really is supposed to be the training wheels for people that are brand new to playing an MMO. And with Shadowlands now becoming a little more popular with, you know, I hear a lot of people that have never played WoW before or haven't played WoW in a decade are coming back to a game and trying to learn how to play again. And they love the experience because it does exactly that. It teaches them the basics of it in a way that, you know, this is movement, this is questing, this is grouping, this is how a dungeon works. Stuff that they may have remembered at one point, but have forgotten, and now they're getting refreshers on. And then the game lets you choose what you experience, and it gives you a decent synopsis of what you're choosing, at least in terms of what the content will be. So, like, I think what they have it set up right now is players do get a choice of what story they're going to experience as they're leveling after they exit Exile's Reach, and I think that's the best part. I don't know that they could really cram lore into that experience successfully. Anything else to add to that?
No, I just I do think that it would be nice if at some point Blizzard sat down and started thinking about new ways to unfold lore. The last real innovation they did was the in-game rendered cinematics, which I really like. And I would like to see them, you know, do more stuff along those lines.
And I'd like to see more Lorewalker stuff, man. I thought that was some of the coolest storytelling way to info dump stuff that they ever had in game. So who knows? All right, our next one. Hello, Cold Lords. So it's time to go, and we're a couple weeks from Shadowlands, and I'm wondering if anyone else feels like I do. I don't want it. I want to stay level 50 forever. I don't want to level to 60 and deal with soul binds and conduits and all of that. Am I alone here? I definitely am excited for Shadowlands, so I can't really... I don't think you're alone, but I'm definitely not somebody that's on that train. Like, I'm okay with moving past level 50 and experiencing new content, experiencing new story, experiencing new soul binds and conduits. I think it's a really exciting time to be a player because all that stuff is new, and it's getting like that fresh coat of paint on your old favorite, you know, toy. So
I mean I kind of understand where you're going. I mean, like, it's kind of cool to be level 50 right now because, like, you're relatively well geared, you've got your abilities. There's always that weird thing when you start going from 50 to 60 or from, you know, whenever you go into any new expansion, there's that feeling of, oh, okay, I leveled, now I'm weaker. Oh, I just got rid of that gear I've had, you know, that really cool item I got from that raid. I've replaced it with a green. And the soul binds and conduits, that is complicated. I don't blame you for overwhelmed by it. That's fair. But it's not so complicated that I want to not have it and just stay 50 forever. And I definitely want to get out of Boralus. I feel like the story of Battle for Azeroth never really came together for me, and I want to get done. I want to put it behind me and move on to the next expansion. I want to see what the story of Shadowlands has in store. It's not that Battle for Azeroth was bad. I've argued many times it wasn't bad. You can't have this many talented people work on something and have it be bad. But it didn't necessarily do what I wanted it to do, and I'm thinking Shadowlands can do. So
yeah,
I'm not concerned. I'm not as concerned with whether or not I'm 50 or 60. That doesn't matter to me one way or the other. But I'm definitely wanting to see the new zones. I want to go to Ardenweald. I want to go to Bastion. I want to go to Revendre. I want to go to Maldraxxus and see those zones and explore those new places. And there's enough room on that map that I really feel like they're going to put in other places at some point.
And they can expand that out like as much as they want to. They did it in the past, right? Like, I think that's part of it for me too. Like, that's a big part of the excitement is when Vanilla WoW first released, I was getting to explore a world in a different perspective that I had grown to love in the RTSs, and it was all new. It was all fresh. It was all wonderful. And I got to experience all this wonderful story and, you know, some really cool things that never could have existed before. And as expansions moved on, some of them really resonated with me. Some of them didn't. Battle for Azeroth was not a bad expansion, but it didn't resonate with me because I was never into the war between the factions ever. Like, that was never my main thing when World of Warcraft became its own entity. It was all about exploration and learning and experiencing the world and fighting as a hero against these big existential threats and it getting increasingly worse and dealing with the aftermath of that to a certain degree. And that's what excited me about the game. And anytime it swings back to, well, it's about the faction war, I lose interest. And Battle for Azeroth had that, and I know that some players really, really love that, and not taking any of that away from them, but I'm starting to feel like I did now, like I did with Vanilla WoW way back in the day, and the last time I felt like this was probably Mists of Pandaria, is I'm getting to explore a new area. I'm getting to explore something that is fresh, that has never really been fully fleshed out, that may have been mentioned in hushed tones, or I never really expected that I would experience, like Pandaria. Like they talked about, you know, the world turtle, the wandering turtle in the RPG book, but that was it. And they talk about it in Warcraft 3 when we had the Brewmaster hero. That was really about it. And then getting to see it more and experience like that culture and the lands there, it was really exciting to me. And now I'm starting to get that as well, because everything in Shadowlands has a very distinct feel to it. And that's really, really cool, because you go to Ardenweald, it is way different than Maldraxxus. It's way different than Bastion. You feel like you're entering a complete world and learning and exploring. And there are so many things to find that it's hard not to be excited, at least in my viewpoint for that, because it's all fresh and all new and you're getting to uncover things. It's super rad. So, I get that, like Matt said, that there are people out there that want to stay level 50, that feel really good about things that are right now, that don't want to go deal with the new things. Totally valid. And I see you. I support you. But I'm just definitely not in that number. Anything else to add to that one, Matt?
No, because I have to get back into the game because I just got logged out.
I did see that. All right. Let's go ahead and do our last one then.
No, there's two.
There's two? Oh, there is two. I apologize. Second to last. This one is from our friend Vertigree. Question for Blizzard Watch Pod or Lore Watch Pod from Vertigree. Well, we know where it wound up. To the anticipators of Frozen Storms. Although it's 23 degrees C here in Ontario. Very hot.
You know, hell yeah. How nice for you. Like 3 feet of snow outside my house.
It was 70F here, so I can't complain. How did the Scourge physically get everywhere, especially Kalimdor? I know even the relatively short swim north to the Isle of Quel'Danas was enough of an obstacle for Arthas to freeze the ocean so the Scourge could walk over. So I thought, no way they walked underwater through the whole ocean, but there's that Frostdrake down there, though. It's still a lot of water pressure. Yours, Vertigree. What do you think, Matt? How did they get there?
They got taken there by the Legion, generally. Remember Rage Winterchill?
Oh, yeah. A bunch of
Scourge came over with the Legion.
Yeah.
As for how the Legion get there, I'm assuming they take portals.
Or spaceships, though. So, no. We know they have spaceships.
Yeah, but I meant during the Third War, the Legion showed up. They were remember the undead actually showed up in the... If you watch the Night Elf campaign, it's the Night Elves run into undead first.
Mm-hmm.
And then demons after that. So they came over and the Burning Legion brought them. Yeah. I was hoping for a longer answer, but sorry. that one's relatively easy enough that Burning Legion brought them to Kalimdor.
Yeah, and I mean, you can still see like liches and stuff like that. Like, what is it? Razor Friend Downs. That's one of the things. There's a lich there.
Out of the Coldbringer, yep.
Yep. So, I mean, undead could be anywhere. And there is also the possibility that maybe they could just walk underwater. They don't have to breathe. Maybe they floated across. Who knows? Maybe they made a raft of just undead zombies that...
Well, for that matter, boats. It's not like there are intelligent undead at the top of the Scourge hierarchy. They could fly one of the flying citadels over.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I know that if you look at the original Scourge invasion way back when Naxx was just coming out.
Oh, yeah. They're tiny little citadels.
Had citadels. Yeah, and they had the when you went to Tanaris, there was like the summoning areas. That had like the crystals that were like spreading the plague around. So, and they also sent plagued grain to major capital cities, so they could definitely do that too. Lots of ways they could get various Scourge around the world whenever they needed to. They've got necromancers, they've got all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and also don't forget that at the time that Arthas did the whole thing where he froze the water, I don't think he was dead yet, was he?
We had a conversation on Lore Watch this weekend. I'm not digging that one up again. As far as we know, he wasn't dead yet. His soul was blasted when he touched Frostmourne, so it's possible he was dead inside.
Possible. But it's also possible that he didn't want to swim in his heavy plate armor, because unlike most other games, swimming in plate mail is probably not too easy. Just throwing that out there. All right. but yeah, so that's all we got for that one. I guess we move on to our last one. This one's from Tetsemi. How much did you enjoy seeing Taron just dismantled Nathanos. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Like I said earlier, I watched that video 5 times. I'm probably going to watch it again when I get out, when we're done with the podcast. But I'm going to let Matt go because Matt has very strong feelings about what happens to the Night Elves. So Matt, please.
I mean, on the one hand, I've wanted to see Nathanos get his teeth kicked in this entire expansion. And for most of Legion, too. I do not like and when I say that, I don't mean he's a bad character or anything like that. I think he's extremely well acted and extremely well written. I think Mitch mentioned the actor today. I don't remember his name, unfortunately. But, you know, sir, whoever you are, you do an amazing job. You play a smarmy jerk better than anybody. It's amazing. And I was very happy to see Taronda finally get to hurt one of them.
Jim Peary, by the way.
Quite frankly, this is what she should have done to him at Darkshore. This is what should have happened to him then. She should have killed him then. I don't know why they didn't let her. But I guess they wanted to keep him around for stuff that he was going to be doing in later stuff. Definitely wanted him to get his comeuppance, and I definitely am very glad it was Taronda who gave it to him. That's all great, but I do feel like it's hollow if he just comes back. It's hollow if she did give him what he wanted. As much as I said before, I believe I said it in the pre-show, or I might have said it at the beginning of the show, but I like the way she completely no-sells him. Like, the way she just flat out is like, yeah, little man, why don't you come back when you're worth my time? Which is never going to be the case. You are never going to be worth my time. And I did like that. I like that she just outright stomped. But also, I kind of don't like that we kind of focus so much on Nathanos and Sylvanas here. And we constantly keep acting like it's all their fault, everything that happened. Because it isn't.
No, it's not.
Until we deal with that narratively. Not us players. It's not our player. It's not the player's fault. If you're a Horde player, it's not your fault. It is the narrative has been set up in such a way that the organization of the Horde needs to come to terms with its own behavior. And we saw some of that when Sarfang was talking to Anduin, mm-hmm. where Anduin kept trying to excuse it, and Sarfang was like, no, you can't excuse this. We did it. We did these things. They're horrible things, and we did them, and we need to deal with it. And that's something that's why I was a little disappointed when Sarfang died, because then he doesn't get to bring that conversation into existence. He doesn't get to show us. And so I watched it about 8 times. Like I watched it when I got to see it in game, but then unfortunately, because the cinematic is fairly long and Nathanos is on a fairly short respawn timer, I got done with the cinematic and he was back and attacking us. So we all stood there for a while watching the cinematic, and then we came out, and there's Nathanos hitting us again. It's like, ah, I didn't like that. But in general, yeah, I watched it quite a lot. I liked it quite a bit. But at the same time, I know that this is not the end of Taronda's story, nor should it be. This is just the beginning. And so I'm very much that has me looking forward to what happens next. On a completely different level, though, this thing's amazing. Like, the animation is amazing. Mm-hmm. Did you look at her face?
Both of their faces, the amount of... So one of the things that we always talk about in storytelling with, like, visuals is show, don't tell. And that's something, like, it's been for in WoW's past. Like, you look at some of the older cinematics, it was a lot of telling and some showing because that's what the in-game engine could allow. That's what the engine at the time for the cinematics could allow. And looking at where it's come to now, like... Oh boy. Like, look at those faces. Look at the expression on both of them. They're just, it is just phenomenal. I like seriously tip my hat to the cinematics team. I owe you guys a beer or something. You folks a beer, or drink of your choice because they've just gotten so exquisite. And it's not just here too, like looking at some of the ones from Battle for Azeroth, like the stuff with Jaina, she's been so expressive throughout all of Battle for Azeroth, any cinematic she's been in. But all of the faces throughout everything in the cinematic, when you first log in and this one, oof, it's good. It's real good. It makes you feel like they don't have to be talking, and which is good for Taron because she doesn't say a whole lot. But if you slow it down and you watch her face, you watch her body motion, you watch the interaction during the fight, it tells you what her mindset is. It tells you where she is as a warrior. It tells you what's happening with her in such a beautiful way. Like, Oh, so good.
One of the things that people have said in the past, one of the criticisms of Tyrande has been that she's over the top in her emotional presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, this was the most understated performance I've seen out of Tyrande in a very long time. And this is Tyrande had the same voice actor for a long time. Her name's Alisa Gabrielle. She still is the voice actor as of Battle for Azeroth. And so that was her again. And I think that she basically answered any criticism anyone's ever given her, because that was such a beautifully understated, just, where is she? And when he goes off on his spiel, you know, bringing up the people who died at Tel Drissel, all that, and she just replies again, where is she? She doesn't care about what he has to say. She cares about one thing, and when he refuses to give it to her, she just kills him.
And as Red points out in chat, that whisper for Tel Drissel was so strongly delivered. Like,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
The emotion in that moment was like, it hits you. Like, I don't care.
Like, absolutely no exaltation there.
Yep.
There's nothing about, she doesn't celebrate. There's no triumph. She's not victorious. She's just, it's just a statement like, you know, Drossel. It is beautiful, beautiful. I feel like people who haven't been giving her due as an actress really need to watch this cinematic, because she does an amazing job with the very few lines she's given. And the animators and cinematic team did a brilliant job with the faces of the characters and with the body posture of the characters. The absolute poise Tyrande has throughout that entire thing. When he comes at her with two axes, she's like, it's not boredom. She's very intent and very focused. But he doesn't, like, there's absolutely no point where he even pressures her.
Yeah, like, she doesn't break a sweat, and it reinforces what we know about the Night Warrior, what we've learned about the Night Warrior, and the scale of the power on top of Tyrande's years of experience, right? Like, everybody's like, oh, she's just a priestess. No, she's lived through quite a number of things.
Yeah, she was in the you know, the original War of the Ancients, guys. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, she just didn't really choose to do that a whole lot of the time. She was always the moderate voice, but now, no, you're seeing that deadly, fluent, elegant grace of not just the Night Warrior, but of Tyrande in bearing her experience. Because, and I think that's part of the things that I think is important, too. Like, she's not just the Night Warrior. She's not just somebody who doesn't have knowledge of combat or self-awareness and is just given this immense power and then immediately, you know, knows how to do everything. She's not Billy from the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, where as soon as he uses his power coin, he goes from being the bumbling, awkward, you know, person that stumbles over his own 2 feet to, you know, being a martial arts master. No, she has all these years of experience, and now she just has the power that backs that up in such a complimentary way. It's that fluid, deadly grace, and it's on display. Like, I'm not even 100% sure she was leveraging the Night Warrior power here, because, like, even he said, like, Nathanael says, oh, you know, you've really grown into your power. No, I think her limiters just got pulled off. I think that maybe she just stopped caring about holding back, and you're starting to see what a night elf at peak form could do. Because, like, there was no spells. The only thing she really did is, like, when the Blight Hounds were coming, you had the strikes of the moonbeams, which was absolutely glorious and beautiful. But that's it. She didn't display any other overt power. That could be all her. And that's,
quite frankly, those two moonbeams, she's done stuff like that in the past. She didn't need the Night Warrior for that.
Yeah, and maybe that's the secret of the Night Warrior. Maybe that's why the Night Warrior burns out the people that it's in, is that instead of giving them just extra juice, maybe it just takes off the inhibitors. And you're starting to see the full potential of what elves can do. And I think that's fantastic, because elves have been around for so long in various forms. They've tapped into all sorts of different powers. And she's not a young elf. She's been around for a very long time. Like, that's the part that I love about this, is, like, I think this was her. I think this was not the Night Warrior. I think this was just her showing Nathanos how much she already outclassed him.
Yep. And also, I got to say, completely unrelated, but I want those weapons.
Right? Oh, God, they're so pretty.
Those things were really, really nice.
So pretty. Oh, beautiful. But I think that's it, unless there's anything else you want to add.
Oh, I think we're done. A little early for once, but we did start the pre-show a little early. Sorry, guys, but it happens sometimes.
I think we're right on schedule-ish. Maybe a couple minutes short.
I want to remind Joe, however, now, to do that thing that you forgot to do last week.
Did I forget to do it last week? I thought I did it.
Yeah, you did it after like I'd started, and you're like, oh, I have to do this, so...
Fair enough.
This time I'm letting you do it.
Well, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. And for you, the listeners, Blizzard Watch of Blizzard Watch, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a 30-day trial. Basically, it gives you a great opportunity to check out the service, or maybe pick up on one of those books. Maybe you don't want to have to read before Shadows Rising. You can listen to it instead, and it's a great opportunity because I believe it's the voice actress for Talanji that reads the book, and she does an amazing job. So you can check out that and many of other of Blizzard's other titles and thousands of more at blizzardwatch.com/audible.
Very much, Joe. Again, guys, if you have a question for the show, you can either go to podcast@blizzardwatch.com, our email address, and you can send us an email. Please put podcast or Blizzard Watch in email so we know it's for this show. Or you can go to our Discord server. We've got the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel or the Q Questions channel. Either you can ask questions if you're not. Obviously, the second one. Thank you guys so much for sending us those questions, being here in the chat, and for generally just letting us do this whole podcasting thing. Enjoys it. I know I enjoy it. So you guys are in. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast, and we'll be here again next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.